Hello and welcome to The Stack. This week I speak to guests in Austin, London and Zurich. From a title that explores in depth a country, city or region, every issue, to a bold health publication aimed at young people that is sold in Swiss pharmacies. And for all romantics out there, we find out more about Literature in Love, a new catalogue from Peter Harrington, Rare Books. Stay tuned. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, a title sold in more than 100 Swiss pharmacies. We also take a look at the Literature in Love catalogue made by Peter Harrington Rare Books, perfect for the Valentine's Day weekend. But to start the show, we head to Austin, where the offices of Stranger's Guide magazine is. The quarterly title is visually stunning, looking at a different city or country every issue. The latest one is all about Colombia, and the interesting thing is that they feature local writers for insightful observations. With great illustrations and photography too, Stranger's Guide is a must. I spoke to the title publisher and co-founder, Abby Rappaport.
We wanted to step back and think not only so often with a location, you have to go to very different kinds of outlets to get a full picture, right? So you sort of read about history in one set of old books, and then you read about culture and sort of, you know, what's happening in the contemporary art scene in a different place. And then you read about the politics and human rights and conflict, and those are in an entirely different set of publications. And we really come from the view that all of these different dynamics contribute to the concept of a place and the identity of a place, and you know, and what that, the stories of that place. And so we really wanted to bring those places to life and transport readers to that location, not only through sort of the traditional like travel writing, right? Like sort of, you know, where to go, what to do, but instead to sort of go beyond that into these deeper stories from writers and photographers from that place who have a relationship to that place. So we're never parachuting people in.
It's interesting you said you don't want to parachute people in, because one thing I've noticed from the copies I have here with me is that you try to connect with writers from the particular city or country, and that's quite nice.
That's actually a critical piece for us. So one of our major goals in starting the publication was to create more space and amplify the voices of writers and photographers around the world. And so every guide we do, our benchmark is 75%. We have to get to 75% of the writers and photographers being from that location for us to feel like we did our job. And especially in the United States, it's increasingly difficult for writers and photographers from other countries to make their way here and to get in front of American audiences. And so we're really trying to aid that process and, you know, amplify those voices.
One thing I need to mention is the amazing illustrations in the cover. Who is responsible for those?
So we work with an amazing artist who's also a journalist named Ben Frisch. And we really start with inspiration from old time travel posters and try to sort of take a modern, more critical, thoughtful sort of take on them. So, right, like here's a, we're trying to kind of go beyond the simple, right? People have a stereotype or a, you know, almost like a cartoon of a place. And we try to twist that and sort of, you know, turn the camera back around, right? And so we thought, what better way than to take the old time travel posters and layer on nuance and complexity?
You publish four times a year. You try to do, I think, one in the US, one in a different city internationally. How do you divide where you're heading to?
So a couple of things, we always try to hit a few different continents per year. We really want to kind of take a global perspective. We try to think of places that are both traditional, you know, quote, traditional tourist locations where we want to question the assumptions that people make about those places. And then we also want to take places that maybe people don't think of as, you know, as places that people travel to and, you know, challenge those perspectives as well. So every year we try to hit, you know, at least three, usually we get close to four continents. And additionally, try to think through where are we going to find sort of a critical mass of the storytellers, the writers that can really bring that place to life.
Of course, it's an American title made in the US, but can someone from other countries order a copy of Stranger's Guide?
We ship everywhere in the world, and we do subscriptions everywhere in the world as well. But we also do distribution in the UK, in Ireland, in some parts of Scandinavia. We're sort of always eager to work with bookstores. So we're sort of increasing our presence throughout Europe. And certain guides, we've done partnerships. So for instance, our Lagos guide, we actually partnered with a bookstore, Wida Books in Lagos, and created a Lagos edition that was printed in Nigeria so that it would be more readily available there.
You just have a new issue coming out, Colombia. It must be a very interesting one, right?
We could not be more excited about the Colombia guide. I have to say, it's now become like first on my list of places I want to get to as soon as I'm allowed. I think Colombia was a really perfect kind of topic for Stranger's Guide because people have two different visions of it, both of which are way too extreme, right? Either people have this idea it's scary, you know, and it's sort of overly simplified idea of what conflict looked like there, or sort of now everything's fine. It's a tourist, you know, haven and, you know, beaches, yay, right? And so we really wanted to unpack that and both look at, you know, conflict and how, you know, what that legacy looks like in Colombia, as well as, you know, what's changing and how the country is sort of looks today, both with that legacy and also with so much exciting kind of activity getting built on now.
Are you based in Texas?
So we're based in Austin and Oakland. Those are our two kind of main locations. But then we work with, you know, obviously writers and editors all over the world.
I was going to ask, Texas is such an important state economically in the US. How's the print scene there?
Texas likes to style itself as the third coast. And I think there's some truth to that, right? That it's certainly a great, it's a very vibrant journalism scene here. I was, prior to Stranger's Guide, worked at several Texas publications, the Texas Observer, Texas Monthly, etc. There's a lot of really exciting opportunity. And I also think, per Stranger's Guide, the ability to step back is something we really value. And I think being outside of New York in particular, and outside LA, right, that we're sort of in Oakland and Austin, gives us that perspective and gives us that ability to reach out and sort of think more broadly than maybe we would if we were in sort of the more traditional sort of journalism and publishing capitals. We really try to bring a place to life, not just through narrative, but through photography, which is increasingly unusual, right? And then through these interesting, what we call the call out boxes, which are sort of quirky and intimate details about a place. We really try to take in what we call intimate and idiosyncratic window into a location. So the idea isn't that we're going to tell you everything. We're not trying to be the encyclopedia, but we're trying to kind of give those little details that you only know when you know a place intimately. So for instance, like if you try, do you like to travel as well?
I do.
One of my favorite things when I travel is to go to like the grocery store or a drugstore in the location, because you learn so much.
Me too, I love that.
Right, actually. When you're buying the food, you see, oh, these are the breads, or this is how this is packaged. And that sort of is a sort of concrete version of what we're trying to do. Go beyond like, here's what's at the hotel, and say, let's peel back 1, 2, 3 layers and see what is life like? What's sort of daily life like in these places?
That was Abby Rappaport from Stranger's Guide. Their Colombia issue is available to pre-order now. To London now, where I spoke with Sammy J, head cataloger of Peter Harrington Rare Books in London. Peter Harrington is one of Europe's leading rare books dealers who have traded first editions of books, manuscripts, magazines and fine bindings from their flagship stores in Mayfair and Chelsea since 1969. In time for Valentine's Day, Peter Harrington are releasing a special catalogue dedicated to love in literature, featuring expressions of love in all its forms throughout the ages. Sammy tells me more about it.
Peter Harrington is one of, you know, several rare bookshops in London. We've been going for over 50 years now. I think it was 1969. It was set up in the Chelsea Antique Market, and We still have headquarters in Fulham Road, but I primarily work when I do go, when I'm allowed to go into work at the Mayfair branch. And we have all sorts of departments, and we have, I think, possibly even hundreds of thousands of books. And my work is primarily dealing with the literature side of things, but we have specialists in, that's the wonderful thing about books. It's everything, you wander in and there's whatever you're interested in. Ideally, we'll have something for you. It's military history or philosophy or children's books or art or philosophy and travel and all these sorts of things. I mean, that's the obvious wonder of a bookshop, as you will know. The particular thing about Peter Harrington as a rare bookshop is that everything in there pretty much will be a first edition or signed or inscribed to someone or will have an interesting history in itself or be a manuscript or a letter or something that makes it valuable and collectible and interesting. So it's kind of a cave of wonders in some ways, and it's a great place to work.
Sammy, correct me if I'm wrong. You've mentioned the word collectible. We are in an age where there are more and more people becoming more interested in that. And in shops like yours, I mean, they can find those rare collectible beauties, right?
Thank you. I mean, you mentioned that, what distinguishes a rare bookshop or, a secondhand bookshop from Amazon and print on demand or Kindle and all these other things. I mean, they're all generated by the same love of words and things. It's not, as it were, a different thing. But what, as you say, I think that the rare book world offers is things that are unique and special, and they have a physicality to them that increasingly enchants people, I think, as you say. And I mean, whether it, the physical object is a kind of piece of craft, it's been beautifully printed, it's been beautifully bound, etc., or actually there's something even more unique, like in the actual copy's biography, it's been owned by someone, it's been annotated by someone. Fascinating. That's the thing that really gets me going when I either am out buying books or hunting for things that are interesting, or people bring me wonderful things to consider. It's when something is, for example, like in the catalog, I mean, we had, someone amazing's copy of something amazing, when that means something, and that's totally irreplaceable and unique. Like, for example, one of the things that I really loved in the catalog was Ezra Pound's copy of Ovid, of its Metamorphosis, with all of his annotations, and that copy had an amazing history, and it just means so much to have that in it, and it's totally irreplaceable,
Well, it's Valentine's Day weekend. You have a special catalog called Literature in Love. I had a look at it. It's impressive. Incredible authors from Jane Austen to Pablo Neruda. Tell us more.
It was wonderful to put it together. I do a literature catalog every year with a different theme, and it's always quite fun thinking up what that's going to be. Last year, I did a fantasy catalog and science fiction, which turned out to be surprisingly topical in the environment, lockdown and the kind of apocalyptic fiction and plague novels and all these sorts of things that suddenly turned out to be terribly topical. I wanted this one to, bring people together again, or at least celebrate love as a thing that kind of connects us, and that's been really fun. It's got some really great things in it, and one of the things that I've enjoyed is, we have everything from little beautiful Valentine's gifts type things, nicely bound copies of Shakespeare's sonnets or whatever, to the kind of much, much grander level of kind of high-end specialist collecting. So, I wanted it to be inviting and fun, and to have things for collectors and also for people who buy gifts. Like I was going to mention earlier to you, one of the reasons people come into our shop is that they, and one of the reasons why rare books can be so special is that, people, come in, especially over Christmas time, Valentine's, all that sort of period, looking for like a really, really unique, perfect present for someone. And that's one of the things I enjoy about my job, is kind of helping them find that. But the catalogs are a great kind of place to put in all sorts of stuff and then let people discover for themselves that perfect thing. So,
Sammy, when the tradition of printed Valentine days started, actually?
It's an interesting question. I mean, Valentine's Day as a phenomenon is very old. I may be wrong, but I feel like even the ancient Romans had a thing called the Lupercalia, which was basically the same. I mean, there's always been a day of love and sex and things for people. But the phenomenon of it as a, obviously the stack is all about printed things and literary material. The history from that point of view, in the catalogue, we have a few things which kind of chart the early beginnings of that, at least that I'm aware of, like over 200 years ago, kind of late 18th century, early 19th century, there are these wonderful things that you can find called true lover's knot, where people, you know, lovers would write a poem in a kind of, the line itself would go around the page, creating a really intricate, geometrically beautiful knot. So it's kind of two forms of craft at once. One is the poem, one is the actual kind of visual. It's almost like a concrete poem, which is, you know, in some ways also like a magic spell. They're kind of binding their love in a knot together, and then you give it to your lover. And we have one of those in there that's kind of from about 1800. And that's a wonderful thing in itself and shows the early stages of that tradition. Then you get the kind of more like the Valentines that we're familiar with, where it also becomes commoditized. Do you know what I mean? It becomes something that you can buy, and it becomes a business in and of itself. And you have printed Valentine's cards start going into the later 19th century. And, you know, that's really fun. One of the things I wanted to do with the catalogue is I bought a small collection of beautiful little intricate coloured lace Valentine's cards from England and America around the turn of the century, kind of 1900. But each one of them had a poem in it, because I wanted to sort of show the what we are now familiar with, you know, roses are red, violets are blue, the co-opting of poetry as a you know, part of the commodity of romance. You know, that was kind of fun to show. But it, you know, obviously Valentine's Day goes on today.
COVID-19 affected many sectors. How did it change your job at Peter Harrington Books?
We are very lucky to have been one of the book dealers who have a website, and the whole kind of logistical architecture to deal with online business. You know, people order things, we send it out, it arrives pretty promptly, and people can browse things, everything's photographed, everything's fully described, etc., etc. So in that sense, obviously, you know, part of the business that we used to rely on people coming into the shop and browsing, and the wonderful serendipity of that just disappeared, you know. But thankfully, a lot of the traffic kind of just transferred itself to our website, and thankfully that was okay. But like you say, you know, it's harder to, you know, wander into a website and kind of, you know, find what you're not looking for, as it were, than it is in a, you know, in an actual bookshop. But we have a lot of specialists and booksellers who are kind of working proactively to communicate with customers. And, you know, so it's not just a question of kind of you click on the thing you think you want and it arrives, but you can ask us questions. And a lot of my job is being to stay in touch with the people that I have relationships with who are collectors, and I know that they're interested in X, Y, and Z, and we stay in touch. And actually, we've been very grateful for the, you know, a lot of customers are kind of sensitive to the fact that over last year, it's not so easy for people, you know, for shops. And so they've kind of deliberately stayed in touch and said, you know, also because people, you know, either were furloughed or they're working from home, and they just, the whole of last year, people had a lot more time to spend with their books and with their libraries and reflect on what it is they care about. That's what book collecting is, really. It's a sort of embodiment of what you care about. And so that, you know, in a funny way, I think a lot of the trade, at least the ones that had the internet to kind of enable them to carry on business, found themselves busier than ever during COVID, which is a blessing.
And Sammy, I am very curious. I mean, who is a collector? We have this image that is someone older, perhaps.
Of course, certainly the old images of an older person, usually male, usually wearing tweed or something. That's not my experience on the whole. We have been. I mean, I came into the trade 8-9 years ago, and you know, my experience has been an increasing amount of younger people, of women collectors, all sorts, and I don't know specifically why that is. It's something in the nature of books, though, because, as I say, you know, we offer potential interest from any angle, you know, whatever you're interested in. And it doesn't just have to be the kind of traditional, obvious, old school books that you might, you know, think of in any subject. But there's always, as long as you show your interest in something new and exciting, you know, that people haven't thought of before, then you can work with a bookseller to kind of find and develop that. So it's always very flexible and exciting. And I think, yeah, we've had a lot of younger people and a lot of interesting people from different, you know, less traditional walks of life kind of come into collecting. I had a very interesting experience last year, and particularly over the last month, where we don't usually talk about our, you know, the people, that specific people that we deal with, but in this case it's okay because it was in the news. a guy, amazing fashion designer called Kim Jones, who is the creative director for Dior and also for Fendi, he has been collecting books through us and other people as well. And last month he did his annual Paris Fashion Week, you know, couture show for Fendi, and he themed the entire thing on Virginia Woolf and Orlando and the Bloomsbury Group, and took inspiration from his collection. And that was really fun. The reason I mention it is obviously then there was a lot of press around it. There's a video of the exhibition coming out and other things. And you know, I can definitely anticipate that kicking on into increased enthusiasm for the idea of collecting. You know, suddenly becomes incredibly cool.
That was Sammy J from Peter Harrington Rare Books. And finally on the show, an exciting Swiss title aimed at young people. The interesting thing is that the health publication is published by Rotpunkt Apotheken, a collective of more than 100 Swiss pharmacies. The educational title is designed in a fanzine-like style, with cheeky photography and great design, with the help of Markus Kraft from Studio Markus Kraft. He tells me more about her, the name of the title, and more about the design of it.
Hair magazine is a health magazine, and it's aimed to young people between the age of 16 and 25. And it's published by Rotpunkt Apotheken, which is a collective of independent pharmacies here in the German-speaking part of Switzerland. And by now, they are well over 100 pharmacies where you can get the magazine. And each issue addresses one topic surrounding the human body. So this could be, for example, the ears or the eyes or boys and girls, but it can also be a bit broader, like alcohol or sex is, of course, a very important topic for this target group. And it's published every 3 months, so it's a quarterly.
And at the moment, you're working on issue 37, which I believe will be all about sleep. And to be honest, I mean, I want to read about sleep because everybody's kind of sleeping patterns have changed a bit since COVID as well.
Yeah, right. I just sent it to the printer today, the issue about sleep. Yeah.
And Markus, a question. I mean, you help design the magazine. Because you're working with this kind of specific target audience, I mean, what I find fascinating is, I mean, the design is very bold. And I think if you're young, I mean, it would definitely like pop in your eyes. I mean, if you're going to the pharmacy and see that, was that your intention in a way? It doesn't look very clinical, if I may say. It's very kind of, you know, colorful imagery, you know, it's very young. There's a young vibe to it.
Yeah, of course, that's the purpose of it. I mean, when I was approached by the client 9 years ago, if I would like to do that magazine, I thought, this could be something interesting to bring something new into this pharmacy world, you know? And everybody is expecting a glossy magazine from a pharmacy. But we decided to do the opposite. And the aesthetics of Hair Magazine is very much inspired by the aesthetics of punk fanzines from the 70s and 80s, where you have a lot of handwriting and things pasted together with tape. And, you know, it's the complete opposite of Swiss design. You know, there's not even a grid behind it. And it's also printed on newspaper print to give it a really warm feeling and a haptic that you usually don't expect from this companies, pharmacies. Yeah.
And I find it quite interesting because I haven't come across actually pharmacy magazines like that. I mean, it's usually kind of a shopping catalog or something a bit boring, you know, like something that you would see on your medicine prescription. So I find it's quite, you know, nice and avant-garde that Swiss pharmacies are doing this, right?
Yeah, I mean, the purpose of this whole magazine is actually to educate the young people, which are, of course, the future clients of the pharmacies, and to educate them that pharmacies in Switzerland have a high competence in everything related to the human body. You know, in Switzerland, you also have to study 4 years at university to become a pharmacist. And they even are allowed here to give vaccination, for example. In other countries, I think this is not so much the case. So it's all about putting this into the young people's mind that you don't have to go to the doctor for every little thing you have.
Marcus, just a quick question. I mean, you've been a regular guest, you're Monaco 24. I mean, did you used to work with any other kind of print titles, or and was that kind of a new, or was that a kind of a new experience for you?
Yeah, I mean, with my design studio, I do, of course, a lot of print design, and I have a lot of experience in that field. But for me, it was really interesting to put my knowledge in design into something, you know, because I always used to work more for cultural clients, and this is something more commercial. And I found it really interesting to put these aesthetics that could also be used in the cultural sector into a commercial context.
Just for those, I mean, who want to see the magazine, is it, I know it's available at the pharmacies, but do they have some sort of online presence as well, or just strictly just buying at the pharmacy?
No, you can actually browse all past issues on the website of the Hair magazine, and it's called hairmagazine.ch.
And sorry, I'm going to show my bad German here, because I have issue 36 in hands. What is actually, it's called Schmerzen. What is Schmerzen again?
Schmerzen means pain in English.
Oh, now I get it, some of the imagery. I understand. It's fun. I just find it quite cheeky. For example, I have this section here called Schmerzeperten, which is, there's a man living kind of an ice lake in a way.
Yeah, this is Wim Hof, who became world famous as the Iceman. And he invented a special breathing technique to survive in really cold temperatures. He's from the Netherlands originally.
That was Markus Kraft. Issue 37 is out soon, and it's all about sleep. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, as usual, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monaco.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monaco.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And before we go, a little song for you, as it's Valentine's Day. You know, delight. What is love? You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
What is love?